Millions of grandparents raising their grandchildren often face hurdles in caregiving with systems not necessarily built to meet their needs. These so-called grand families may form in the absence of a parent. And that trauma is taking a toll on the mental health of these caregivers and their grandchildren, especially following the pandemic and the opioid epidemic. That's according to a new report out this month from the nonprofit Generations United. The group notes that as states figure out how to use their share of $50 billion in opioid settlement money, they aren't aware of any who plan to better serve children and caregivers left behind because of parental death, incarceration, or because they're in treatment programs. It recommends policymakers ensure grandparents' basic needs are met so they can prioritize their family's mental health and wellness. These findings made us think of a conversation that I had last year, and I wanted to revisit now with two grandparents talking about their experience caring for a child. Linda Lewis is currently raising two school-aged great-grandkids in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
And Eugene Vickerson is in Hawkinsville, Georgia, and he's already raised a grandson and a granddaughter. They're both out of the house, and now he's sharing his life lessons and advocating for other grand families. Hi, Eugene.
Hello. Hello.
So welcome to both of you. And we're trying something new at Here and Now, where we share the microphone with community leaders. So, Eugene, since you've been raising grandkids a bit longer than Linda and also leading support groups on this topic for years, I want to hand over to you to start us off with any questions that you may have for Miss Lewis as she navigates raising young children.
Okay, Miss Lewis, first of all, how old are your grandchildren that you're raising?
They're 9 and 9, but they're not twins. They're 11 months apart.
All right. Well, what kind of support are you getting as far as support from state agencies or federal agencies? What kind of support are you getting?
Well, I do get medical, and then we have a program here for aging grandparents, and I get a stipend once a month where somebody can keep them, and they'll pay them $100 to keep them if it's one day or 2 days or however, so I can get a break. So that helps a lot.
Okay.
I get a few food stamps, not nothing to brag about, but we have a lot of churches around here that has food pantries.
Right, right.
I would go to the food pantries and pile up on my canned goods, and then the food stamps that I got, I could get meat. Now, they may not have what they wanted to eat, but the Lord has always provided to put something in this house for us to eat. Since I've lived here, I've never had no utility go off, and I tell you, many days I prayed and cried, and I'm thankful for what little bit help I can get from anybody.
Right, right, right. So my experience was a little bit different because I'm a vegetarian, and so I don't serve meat in my family, you know. Now, what I was able to do was start a garden. And so that made my personal experience a little bit more manageable. You know, I'm sure you've noticed that there's not a lot for grandparents. There's not a lot of resources. And you have to, have you had that experience of having to fill out so many, you know, so many forms and stand in line? And
I'm telling you, for real. And then the thing that bothers me at my age, they expect my two great-grandchildren to live off of my income, and I only get Social Security.
Exactly.
So you try to manage for the medicine I take and then two other children, you know, it only goes so far.
That's right. Yeah, that's why my heart goes out to you, because I know what you're faced with. And what I discovered was that grandparents get much less support systematically. In other words, the support that you get is really not designed for grandparents.
Right. Now, I have legal guardianship of my two great-grandbabies. And so that helps a little
bit. You had to go to court to get that, right?
Yeah, I had to go to court, and my brother
paid
all to have it done for me because he knew I didn't have any money.
Wow.
I'd love to jump in here to ask you both why you persevere, because it sounds so challenging, both having to live off a very small income, not receiving much help. What pushes you to keep going?
Love. That big four-letter word. Love is what keeps pushing me.
Yeah, the same thing. It's love. It's that commitment. You know, culturally, I'm a historian. And so culturally, African-Americans have that kind of, I don't know how to describe it. And it's not just African-Americans. It's Native people. But this kind of commitment where you'll sacrifice your life almost. And I'm sure you've, not that we choose to sacrifice our life, but the commitment is so strong that nothing gets in the way and nothing deters us. Nothing, even having to, like in my case, for example, when I didn't have the funds to do what I needed to do, I actually used my mortgage funds to help take care of my grandchildren. Now, I don't advise anybody to do that, but that's the kind of commitment that we have, you know, where they come first.
I'd love to ask you both. We've heard how hard it is and the challenges that you're telling us about. What makes you smile? Any favorite memories to share about raising your grandchildren? What makes it beautiful and rich for you?
Okay, I'm going to go first. I went to the school for Thanksgiving to eat Thanksgiving dinner with my little girl, and I fell last Christmas and broke my femur, so I hadn't been to any school functions or anything. And when she thought I wasn't going to come, and they pulled me up there in the wheelchair, and she saw me, and she began to cry, and I began to cry. And that was the most happiest moment, to see how happy she was just to see me. And I will never, ever forget the look on her face when she saw that her mama was there.
Miss Lewis, you're going to make us all cry.
Well, yeah, that is so interesting, Miss Lewis, because I was thinking about that just the other day. I would often go in and have lunch with my granddaughter, and she would be so proud papa was there eating with her. She would bring her friends, and her little friends would stand around, you know, and my granddaughter would be so proud to say, this is my papa. So that same experience was just such a joy coming in there and getting that special extra love, you know.
And I think what I hear in both of you is that you're creative and loving in the face of all these challenges and obstacles. I wonder if you each want to just say a last word to each other. Miss Lewis to Eugene, Eugene to Miss Lewis.
It was nice talking with you, Eugene, and you have a wonderful holiday. Right.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you so much. And Ms. Lewis, my heart goes out to you because I know what's involved. I hope you continue to take care of yourself and put yourself somewhere up there closer to the top, because I know sometimes when you're taking care of somebody else, you neglect yourself. I'm aware of that. You know, you don't do the exercise. You don't eat the way you should. So I respect you. My heart goes out to you. And continue the struggle. Continue, because you know what the outcome can be.
Children
need what you have to share.
Both of you, your grandchildren and great-grandchildren, are so lucky to have you. And I thank you so much for sharing your stories with us.
Yes.
Yes, you're welcome.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much.
We've been listening to a conversation I had last December with Eugene Vickerson and Miss Linda Lewis, two grandparents who have served as guardians to their grandchildren. We got an update this week from both of them, and they're doing well. Miss Lewis tells us her SNAP benefits dropped at the end of the pandemic, so she's been relying on more help from her local food pantry. Her church has also been a critical support to her family, providing meals and transportation.